So we're beginning Gemara Makos. We're up to Beis Amud Aleph, and we'll review what we said yesterday. We have a bunch of new faces here. The first topic we're going to discuss is Edim Zomimim. Edim Zomimim is a specific scenario where two witnesses walk into court, and they say, we testify that we saw the following thing, that so-and-so did the following thing, that and then the court rules based on their testimony, but does not execute their ruling yet. It could be the court rules to give the death penalty, or that so-and-so will pay such and such, or that so-and-so will receive lashes, or that so-and-so must be exiled. They give a ruling, but they don't execute it yet. And between the ruling and the execution, along walk in two new witnesses, and they say, hey, you two, you first pair of witnesses, you were with us at the time that you claim you witnessed the crime. Maybe the crime happened. We're not saying it did or didn't happen. We're saying you didn't see it, because you were with us somewhere else. And that's called Edim Zomim. So the first witnesses are witnesses that plotted to hurt someone else. And so the Torah gives us a special ruling for such a scenario. V'asitem lo kashel zamam. You do unto them what they plotted to do to their brethren. So our Mishnah begins. Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim. How do witnesses become Edim Zomimim? And the Gemara is going to explain that really, that's not what the Mishnah means to say. What the Mishnah really means to say is the whole idea of Edim Zomimin is that you do unto them what they plotted. And what the Mishnah means to say is, how do you perform what they plotted in instances where it's not readily available? What they testified, they cannot absorb. They testified about something that you cannot afflict onto them. Now, we are going to see later on in this tractate that this concept of edut shatayachol lehazima, testimony that can become edim zomimim, that's pivotal to all testimony. Meaning, if witnesses say, we saw a murder. We're not sure if it was on a Sunday or a Monday. What difference does it make? We saw the crime. So then we won't accept that testimony because we say the testimony must be culpable to this punishment. It must be that they can become Edim Zomimim. And any testimony that cannot, because they've left themselves enough leeway that they can say, well, we weren't sure if it was Sunday or Monday, so okay, I guess it was Monday. So that, then we don't accept such testimony. So it's not only a punishment, this whole idea of Edim Zomimim, it's also an idea that it's intrinsic to every form of testimony, as we will learn, that it must be a ducha ta'echole azima, testimony that it's possible that you will be able to catch them and make them into Edim Zomimim. So now, the whole idea of Edim Zomimim, what's unique about this, is that A, we believe the second pair. Ordinarily, when two pairs contradict one another, we say, I don't know who's telling the truth. I can't do anything. If two witnesses walk in here and they say, this microphone belongs to you. And then two witnesses walk in and say, this microphone belongs to him. So the courts say, hey, everyone go home. I don't know who's the liar here. Someone's lying. I can't do anything. I have no way of ruling here. I have a contradiction. So I don't know who's telling the truth. Obviously, we'll cross-examine, etc. But at the end of the day, if all's equal, I end up with a question mark. Edim Zomimim is unique. The Torah says, believe the second pair. Punish the first pair. And give them that punishment they intended to administer to the person who they were testifying against. So Edim Zomimim is unique. A, you believe the second pair. B, you administer that identical punishment that you would have administered to that first pair. So what our Mishnah really asks, the Gemara will later on define, is how do you have a scenario that you will administer kashel zamam, the punishment that they plotted to do, in the following cases? Because you have the following cases where it's not so simple. We know that a kohen is prohibited, either biblically to marry a divorcee, or rabbinically to marry a chalutza, a woman whose husband died without children, and then they did the whole procession of chalitza, spinning in the shoe, and then he put it on. So Kohen is prohibited from marrying one of those women. And if he marries her, so then a few things happen. When he engages her, when he does kiddushin, one prohibition. When he lives with her, prohibition number two. When they have children, prohibition number three. When they're intimate, so he not only causes his children to become halalim, which means Kohanim that are defiled, but he also defiles the woman. Meaning, if she will want to marry a Kohen afterwards, she can't do that. She becomes a Chalala as well. So the Torah prohibits this. A Kohen may not marry a divorcee, and every day that they're married is a prohibition. Every time that they're together is a prohibition.
How could she have married a Kohen if she wasn't allowed to marry a Kohen?
Because we rule, it's a machlokes tanoim, but we rule that if a man marries a woman, when the prohibition is punishable by kares, then the kiddushin don't take hold. But when the prohibition is a lav, then the kiddushin do take hold. They are in transgression, but the kiddushin take hold. If a Moabite man, a ger Moavi, engages a regular girl, it's a lav, lo evo Moavi bikal Hashem, but it takes hold. If a Kohen engages a divorced woman, it's a biblical prohibition, but it takes hold. If a man engages a married woman, that's kares, doesn't take hold.
That wasn't what I was asking. What I was asking was how can she, you said that he defiles her from marrying a Kohen, when she's not allowed to marry a Kohen.
Right, you're saying after the first time, so he's living with the halala too, right? That's a good point. That's a good point.
He's saying also that if she's going to leave that guy, she's going to have to get divorced anyways. So he's going to be Grusha and he can't marry Cohen anyways.
Well, even if he drops dead, she becomes a Halala too.
Oh, yeah, also a Halala.
He said she can marry a Cohen, but if the Cohen and her are together, then she can't marry a Cohen. That's what I think he's trying to say.
That's also true.
But she wouldn't be able to marry a Cohen anyway. Why is that an extra thing?
Well, now there are two prohibitions. He'll get double lashes. All the more so. Right, but let's take a different scenario. Let's say she was an almana, a widow, and then a Kohen Gadol married her. And then that Kohen Gadol dropped dead the morning after the wedding. We say once they're intimate once, she becomes a halala. Even though she's an almana, she's never a grusha, a widow is permitted to marry a regular Kohen. Ah, she became a halala. Okay.
Now what about the Kohen? Does he, let's say, the Kohen that marries, I don't know, wait a minute, I'm bringing up a different concept.
The Kohen that marries a Grusha?
To marry a Zona, either, right?
Right, but so, that doesn't affect him, he's still a kosher Kohen.
So he could marry, after that, if he did his tshuva, he could still marry.
Right. Okay. That's relevant to the Gemara at the bottom of the page. When a Kohen lives with a Grusha, Chalutza, or Zona, the Kohen does not lose his Kohen status. We have issues with him, but he doesn't become a halal. His children will be halalim, but he himself is a kosher Kohen still. If you can call him that. Okay, so these witnesses walk into court. Tom and Jerry, they walk into court and they say, okay, Mr. Aaron over there, his mother was really a grusha. He's not a kosher Kohen. He's a halal. He's a ben grusha or a ben chalutza. His mother was a grusha or a chalutza. He's no longer a kosher Kohen. Don't give him the aliyah of Kohen. Don't give him some of the benefits of Kohen. Don't let him serve in the temple. And then those witnesses become Edom Zomimim. Now Tom and Jerry, even if they were Kohanim, we don't say we're going to make Tom and Jerry into Halalim instead. Ela, but rather, what do? We give them each 40 lashes.
How can someone come and say Tom and Jerry were with us? There's no way they can know that his mother wasn't there.
Well, they give testimony, so their testimony is, says Rashi, we were there when the mother got divorced before he was born. So then the witnesses come in and say, ah, but at the time you claim that she got divorced, you were with us out in Honolulu. Nope. So then Tom and Jerry get lashes. What if they walk in and they say, we testify that Al Capone, he killed someone by mistake, and he has to go to exile. And then Tom and Jerry, well, we discover that they're Edom Zomimin. After the court gives ruling, in walk a second pair of witnesses, and they say, Tom and Jerry, when you say you saw that accident happen, you guys were with us. So we don't say Tom and Jerry have to go to Golos. They don't have to exile instead. But rather, they will get 40 lashes. So that's our Mishnah. Gemara.
39 though, right?
Correct. Correct. Maybe later on, when the Gemara discusses it, we'll have a broader discussion as to why it's called 40. Ha, ketzad, ena edim nasim zomimin mibayele. The Mishnah begins by saying, how do witnesses become Edom Zomimin? That's not what happens here. You're not doing to them kasher zomam. You're not performing with them what they plotted to do. So the Mishnah should have said, how do witnesses not become Zomimin? How do witnesses get caught but not get what they plotted to do? Because you're not giving them what they plotted to do in our Mishnah. The odd second question, what were you saying?
I'm saying that you're not giving them the punishment, you're just giving them lashes.
Right.
Which is not the same.
The odd, furthermore, midiktani lekaman, we're going to see the Mishnah later on says, the Mishnah spells out, how do Edom become Edom Zomimin? If the second set of witnesses say, hey, we testify on that day, you were with us at a different place, then they become Zomimin. So that's going to define what Edom Zomimin are. How could you tell me our Mishnah is defining? You have a clear Mishnah there that gives you much more details. What's this Mishnah here for? So what's going on here? So those are our two questions. In order to answer those two questions, question number one, the beginning of the Mishnah doesn't exactly answer, it begins with a question, then it doesn't answer the question. It says, how do you administer what they were plotting? And then it gives you cases where you don't. And secondly, you have another Mishnah that's going to answer that question. So what's going on here? So the Mishnah, in order to answer that question, the Gemara is going to take a long route to answer that question. The Gemara is first going to give you the backdrop to the scene of our Mishnah, and then in light of that, reinterpret the Mishnah, and then you'll have an answer to all your questions. So, our tractate, Makos, directly follows tractate Sanhedrin. And in Sanhedrin, towards the end of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says this following. Kol ha-zomimim, all Edom Zomimim, makdimin lota mita. They will swiftly get the death penalty that they wanted to administer, except for the Edom Zomimin of a Bas Kohen, that if you have a Kohen's daughter who is married to a regular Jew, and then witnesses come in and testify that she committed adultery. So ordinarily, in a regular case of adultery, both offenders, assuming there was warning and they did it on purpose, etc., so both offenders get the death penalty of chenek, where they die in strangulation. There is an exception that the Torah says the daughter of a Kohen we hold to a higher standard, and if she committed adultery, it's a greater defilement, she gets sreifa. A harsher form of the death penalty. So ordinarily we say, Edom Zomimin, they get whatever they were planning on administering to the other guy. Except for this case, where even though they were going to give her a more severe death penalty, they get the lighter death penalty, because we derive it from the verse. We derive from the verse that they get the lighter form of death penalty. So that's the Mishnah there. Along comes our Mishnah and says, there's another case where you don't even come close to that case in performing Kasher Zamam, in giving them what they plotted. The case in Sanhedrin, they wanted to give two forms of death penalty. They will get the lighter death penalty. Our case is a case where you don't administer what they plotted altogether. They were planning on doing one bad thing. You're giving them something totally different. That's our Mishnah. Okay, so now let's see all that in the Gemara.
I have a question. What if, like, that, like, there were like 100 people, each one saying that the one before is lying? Do we the last one? Do we believe him? And then the one before that, we make him Edom Zomim, or like the 99th one, we make Edom Zomim, or like,
what do you think?
I think, yeah, but I think that, I mean, I don't know, actually.
I would say no.
You would say no?
Depending on who they're trying to get the punishment to, right? They'll all be coming down to the base of the original witness that's trying to put the punishment towards the first person.
No, because I heard if there are three, you don't believe the first one that lied, you believe the one in the middle. No, you believe you... The first one that lied, that isn't a conspirator, the middle one is. Is that not true?
So, this is a Mishnah later on. We'll see it.
Yeah?
The Mishnah has a machlokes, and we'll see it in the Mishnah and the Gemara later on. So, it's a good question. We'll get there.
So just you mentioned like the different levels of punishment. Like, there's four different death penalties, right? What are the different levels of punishment?
Skila, Shreifa, Hereg, Chenek, and it's a machlokes tanoim. But that's, yeah. Skila, Shreifa, Hereg, Chenek.
What's Hereg?
Hereg is by sword.
That was Hereg, in the order of severity. I think, it's a
think so?
I think that was what I said a long time ago, and you corrected me.
I think it's a machlokes tanaim.
Right.
Okay, so look it up. It's a Mishnah and Sanhedrin.
No, getting being stoned up is like thrown up a rock, right? It's not literally stoned.
Have I heard straight, but it's the worst. Maybe not.
Oh, that's the machlokes. Skila, Shreifa, Hereg, Chenek. The Mishnah says. Rabbi Shimon says, Shreifa, Skila, Chenek, Hereg. Chenek, Hereg. But Skila, Shreifa, Hereg, Chenek is the Stam Mishnah.
Shreifa being the worst?
Okay.
Why can't I get this? I swear to
God. The worst, it goes in lessening severity. From Skila down to Shreifa, down to Hereg. Okay.
So Shreif is either the worst or the second worst.
Oh no, wait, you're right. That's
Skila is the bottom right exactly. Away.
I am sorry, I remember.
Skila the worst or the second.
That's okay. I saw the mission. I
remember good.
I think being strangled is worse. They put like hot lead.
They strangled you and they put hot lead in you.
Oh, really?
So now we had two questions. We asked, the question doesn't seem to, the answer doesn't seem to address the question. And we have another Mishnah that does address the question. So what's going on here? So the Gemara answers, Tana Hatam Kai. Our Tana of our Mishnah is really going on what we said over there in the end of Sanhedrin. That the Mishnah towards the end of Sanhedrin tells us, Kola Zomimin Makdimin Lo Tamita, all Eidim Zomimin Makdimin. They can anticipate that they will get the same death penalty that they wanted to administer. Chutz, except from Mizomimei bat kohen uvoalam. The Edom Zomimim who testified about the daughter of a kohen and the man she committed adultery with. She'en makdimin lo tamita. They do not ascend to the same death penalty they wanted her to get. Ela lemita acheret. But rather they get a different death penalty. The death penalty they wanted to give him. Not the death penalty they wanted to give her. And then the Mishnah, our Mishnah coming off of that Mishnah says, ויש עדים זוממים אחים שנושאים בין דין הזמה כל עיקר. There are another type of עדים זוממים who we do not perform hazama, we do not perform giving them what they plotted altogether. Now this is a huge chiddush what we're saying here. Because we explained yesterday, the whole idea of Edom Zomimim is a chiddush in the Torah. Ordinarily, why believe the second pair more than the first pair? So what do you say? The Torah said so. Fine, I could give you a logic for it, but at the end of the day, the Torah says so. So I'm doing it not based on my logic. I'm doing it based on a series of laws the Torah gave me. So I better have a Torah source for this halacha I'm saying in this Mishnah, because what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, I'm punishing you because the Torah says I should give you what you plotted to do. So you want to make him into a halal, now I'm going to beat you up. What's the connection? There has to be a Torah source for this. Meaning, if you're going to tell me they're Edom Zomimin, so what do you do with Edom Zomimin? Give them what they wanted to do. Either that or nothing. But by what right are you giving them something else? So our Mishnah comes along and says, I'll tell you an even bigger chiddush. There's a time where you have Edom and we'll call them Edom Zomimin, but I'm not going to give them what they plotted to do altogether. Your case in Sanhedrin, well, they wanted to give two types of death penalty. I'll give them one of the two. Now I'll show you a case where I don't give them anything of what they plotted to do, and yet they're Edom Zomimin. And about that, the Mishnah, so there's like an inferred sentence that's not written in the beginning of our tractate that says, connecting to what I just told you in the previous tractate, there's another type of witnesses that we don't do Hazama altogether, Ela Malkut Arba'in, but rather we give them the lashes, Ketzad. And about that our Mishnah asks, how so? Medim anu bishploni shu ben gushal ben chalutza. If they come and testify, we testify so-and-so is a halal because his mother was a divorcee. Or she was a woman who had chalitza. En umrim yaseze ben gushal ben chalutza tachtav. We don't say that Tom and Jerry should become halalim in their stead. Ela loket arba'im. But rather, they get 40 lashes. So you're right. Our question was not the way we read it simply, how do you perform the din of Edom Zomimin? That's addressed later on. Our question was, how do you do Edom Zomimin in a situation where you do not perform Kasha Zoma? Now the Gemara says, okay, fine, so you answered my semantics. But Minani Mili, where'd you get this from? This idea that you give 40 lashes. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Who was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was the great Amora who outsmarted the angel of death, right? The angel of death came to him and said, time to go. And he said, wait. The angel of death said, what's your wish? What do you want? He said, I want to go see the Garden of Eden. So he said, okay, come, I'll take you to see it. And he said, wait, you're a scary fellow. I can't go with you. You got a scary sword on you. So the angel of death said, what do you want me to do? He said, let me hold on to your sword. Then I'll go look at the Garden of Eden. So the angel of death said, fine, you hold on to my sword. Give him his sword. They go for a tour. They fly up to the Garden of Eden. He says, there it is. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, I can't see from here. There's a wall around it. You got to take me up on top of the wall. So the angel of death takes him on top of the wall. He's holding the angel of death's sword, and he jumps in. So the angel of death says, you can't do that. Come back out. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, no, I'm not coming out. And the angel of death isn't allowed to go into the Garden of Eden. So he said, but that's not fair. I'm supposed to take your life. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, okay, tough luck, I'm not coming out. So the angel of death says, what do you mean? I did my end, you do your end. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, no, I'm not coming out. So the angel of death goes up to Shemaim and he says, hey, this isn't fair. You told me to give him a wish, I gave him a wish. He outsmarted me. He's in there and I didn't take his life yet. So Hashem said, okay, check his history. If he ever had to go back on his word, if he ever had to annul a vow, so then kick him out of the Garden of Eden. But if he never went back on his word throughout his life, he never had to annul a vow, then we have no rights to kick him out. He outsmarted you, he's in there for life. So they checked, and he never went back on his word. He was an honest man, and he never did Taras Nadarim, right? He never undid a vow. So the angel of death said, okay, I can't touch him. He looks down at Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi and says, but give me back my sword. I got a job to do in this world. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, no. He says, what do you mean no? I got my job in this world. You got your job. Let me do my job. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, no, I don't like the way you do your job. I'm not gonna give you back your sword. So in Shemaim, they don't agree with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. You know, he's got a job to do. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, fine, I'll give you back your sword, but you have to promise me a few things. And the Gemara goes through certain things that he demanded of the angel of death to kill people in a more kind way. Like there are certain things that used to happen when people died, and certain types of death that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, those are not nice. I learned the Gemara. I got to leave something to your curiosity. Where is the Gemara? I don't remember. But if you want, remind me, I'll look it up. I don't remember. Where is that Gemara? Don't remember. Okay, so that's the great Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So our question was, where do we have this idea from that you give 40 lashes and that you don't make the children into... How do you know that you don't make the witnesses, Tom and Jerry, into halalim? You know, Tom and Jerry were trying to make poor Al Capone into a halal, or Aaron into a halal, so why don't we make them into halalim? So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the following derivation. Domar Kro, Because the pasuk in the laws of Edim Zomim says the following: Vasitem lo kasher zamam. Do unto him, unto each of the witnesses, as they plotted to do unto their brother. So we say, lo, you do it unto him, velo lezero, and not to his children. And if you're going to make him into a halal, so a halal, well, for generations, all his sons become halalim till eternity. His sons, his grandchildren, etc. So the Gemara says, okay, so you have a derivation from the pasuk, not to make future generations, not to punish future generations of an eid zomim. But v'lifselu lididei, v'lo lifselu lezarei. So okay, make him into a halal, and don't make future generations into halalim. Make a new type of halal. Says the Gemara, no, that doesn't work. V'inan kasher zamam lasot. The Torah says you have to do unto him that which he plotted to do unto others. And when he was plotting, what were Tom and Jerry planning on doing? Not only to make Aaron into a halal, there, once Aaron's a halal, all his descendants are going to be halalim. So if you're just going to make Tom and Jerry into halalim, you didn't do kasher zamam. You didn't give them the punishment they were planning on administering, because you're only making one generation halalim. Vileka. And if you'll only make them into halalim, you have not fulfilled kasher zamam. You have not fulfilled punishing them as they plotted to do. So that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's source. How do I know that we do not make them into halalim? Because the Torah says, Vasitem lo, do unto him what he plotted. We say him, but not future generations. So far, so good? Mr. Hassan, yes? Okay, let's summarize. What do we see until now? Any one of you want to summarize, or should I? I should? Okay. Our Mishnah began asking how do witnesses become Zomimin, and it gave us cases. It said, let's say they testify that so-and-so is a Chalal, that his mother was a Grusha or a Chalutza. We don't say they should become Chalalim, but rather they get 40 lashes. If they testify that so-and-so, we saw him kill unintentionally, we don't say that they should go to exile, as they tried to make him go into exile, but rather they get 40 lashes. So the Gemara began by asking, this isn't the scenario where you gave them what they plotted. How could you begin the Mishnah by asking, how do you have Edim Zomimin? Edim Zomimin by definition means you give them what they plotted to do. Here you're not doing that. So what does the introduction have to do with the Mishnah? And secondly, we have a Mishnah later on that clearly explains how Edim becomes Zomimin, what the second set of witnesses have to testify and how you do it. So what are you doing over here? So the Gemara says, you're right. You need a slight introduction. The introduction is the previous Mishnah, in the end of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says that Edom Zomimin ordinarily can anticipate that they will get the exact death penalty they meant to administer, except for in the scenario where they were going to give two different types of death penalty. Even there, ordinarily, we'd give them a heftier one. But here we have a derivation that you give them the punishment they meant to give the guy, the adulterer, which is a lighter punishment than the punishment they meant to give the bas kohen. And coming off of that Mishnah, where the Edom Zomimim don't get exactly what they were trying to administer, along comes our Mishnah and says, I have another case where you don't give them what they were plotting to do altogether, but rather you give them lashes. And about that our Mishnah says, Ketzad. What the Mishnah really means is, how do you do Edom Zomimin in scenarios where you're not going to give them what they were planning on doing? Such as, when they testify he's going to be a halal, what you do is, you give them the lashes. Next our Gemara asked, how do you know not to make them into halalim? And to that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi answered, because the Pasuk says, Vasitem lo, do unto him what he plotted to do. Him, but not future generations. And if you make him into a halal, you're punishing future generations as well. So the Gemara said, okay, so punish him, but make a clause that future generations aren't affected. The Gemara says, well, that's not what he plotted on doing. So then you're not fulfilling the din of kasher zamam. The Torah says, punish him as he plotted to do. Well, he plotted to hurt much more than one generation. So if you're only going to make him into a halal, you haven't accomplished kasher zamam. So this is the basis for not making the witnesses, Tom and Jerry, into halalim.
But
just 1 second, guys. Sorry. Till here, we're all together?
Yeah, they still be considered...
Just 1 second.
They're still considered Edim Zomim?
Yes, that's a big Chiddush, yeah. They are called Edim Zomim, yeah.
These two answers contradict themselves. So one answer is we don't make the kids Chalodim because it says Yod, and Dor is Yodim, and then the other answer goes on between that answer.
No. It's two stages, no. First we said we can't make him into a Chalal, because that would punish future generations. So then we suggested, so why not make just him a halal? So we said that wouldn't work, because that not, yeah, then you're not fulfilling kasha zamam. So I can't. What should I do? So that's later on the Gemara is getting derived. How do you know to give him lashes? But I can't fulfill kasha zamam.
That's the proof that we used for the second answer, which was he wanted to do the whole children. So then we should do that.
I can't do, right. And because of the first answer, I can't do that. So I can't fulfill, right. I have to fulfill both, and I can't. So that's why I have to find something else. You're right, it is a contradiction. That's our point. We cannot fulfill both verses, so now we have a problem. So that's what the Gemara is going to have to bring a source. How do you know to give lashes? That's the next question. Okay. The next answer, the Gemara brings, the Gemara is going to refute. So we'll summarize it and then read it inside. Barpada offers another source for this idea, meaning our question is, how do you know not to administer this punishment to the Edom Zomimin? How do you know not to make them into Chalalim? And the Gemara's next answer is a fortiori, a kal v'chomer. The Gemara says, look, when a Kohen does what's wrong, when a Kohen marries one of the prohibited women, so then he defiles her. He defiles his children, but he himself is not defiled. Fantastic halacha in the Torah. Once a kohen, always a kohen. So, in such a scenario, where the witnesses didn't even succeed in defiling the plaintiff, their testimony was never executed. It was only a plot. So then, certainly you can't cause them, by virtue of their testimony, they cannot become halalim. If in scenarios where a person sins, marries a prohibited woman, and destroys his seed, he destroys his children, they become halalim, and even so he remains clean. So certainly in a scenario where they only plotted to destroy someone and make him into a halal, they themselves should not become halalim. That's his logic, and the Gemara is going to knock that out of the water in a second. Balpada amal. Barpada offers the following answer. Kal vachomer. You could learn this idea from a fortiori. Uma hamichalel. If you see that a kohen that defiled eino mitchalel, nonetheless, even though he defiled his wife, he defiled his children, he does not become defiled. He remains a kohen. Habalechalel. These witnesses who came with the attempt to defile. Velochilel, but they did not ultimately defile because their testimony was revoked before it came into effect. Einodin shloit chalel, doesn't it make sense that they should not become defiled? So that's the fortiori. Matkiv la Ravina, Rabbi Avina comes on the attack. Ravina is short for Rabbi Avina, just like Rava is short for Rabbi Abba. Matkif la Ravina, Ravina attacks. In Ken, if you want to apply this fortiori with regards to Edim Zomimin, Bitalta Torat Edim Zomimin. So then you could just throw away the whole idea of Edim Zomimin. Why? Because let's say the witness has testified, Chaim Yankel over there, what a guy. We were standing with him Shabbos afternoon. He said, I gotta have a smoke. I gotta have a smoke. He went and got a cigarette. Then he got a matchbox. And we said, Chaim Yankel, don't. You're gonna get the death penalty. It's a biblical prohibition. And if you do it, you're gonna get the death penalty. He said, I'm doing it. Struck the match. They come into court and they testify about Chaim Yankel. Chaim Yankel says, no, I didn't. I was in Beis Medrash learning. Was anyone there with you? No. Hey, Chaim Yankel, they cross-examine the witnesses. They tell him, Chaim Yankel, do vidui. You know, we're going to kill you. You got to say, I'm sorry, Rabbon Shalom. Chaim Yankel says, I'm not sorry. I never did it. Okay. They take him out. They say, does anyone know anything in his benefit? Can anyone say anything? They try to verify. Nothing. They cross-examine. Nothing. Okay. Pour him Chaim Yankel. They take him up to a tall building. Knock him off. And they stone him to death. Okay. He says, I didn't do it. I didn't. Dead. Second after he stops breathing. In walk. Da-da-da-da-da. Oh, so Christopher Reeves, and no, Christopher's not a Jewish name. Okay, so his chavruta, right? Shmulek and Avremi, they walk in and they say, they come charging in on their horses, and they say, hey, hey, we were there. So the court says, where were you? They say, what do you mean? These Tom and Jerry, these bums, they were with us. We were with them. We were out there, they were by the river trying to sail their sailboat on Shabbos. You kidding? They didn't see Chaim Yankel for beans. They couldn't have seen him. Oh, he's dead now. We take him into court, we interview him, but he's dead now. So what did we say? When do you have Edim Zomimim? When the courts did not execute based on the testimony of Adam and Jerry. But now that the courts executed, what do we say? Hands up, I can't do anything. There's no concept of Edim Zomimim. We only administer the punishment. We only do Edim Zomimim if they didn't do it. But once they did it, once they succeeded, no concept of Edim Zomimim anymore. So
get off scot-free.
That's a good question. That deserves a different... that's a better...
Not for our discussion.
Right. Well, we'll get to that one day. So... what the Gemara, what Ravina says is, wait a second. If Tom and Jerry succeeded in killing Chaim Yankel, they don't get killed, right? So then what happens if they only plotted to do it but didn't succeed in their plot? Of course they shouldn't get killed, right? But we don't say that fortiori. So then the Torah is telling us not to view Edim Zomim in that way. Meaning what you're trying to do is say, if they only plotted but didn't succeed, so then no, they only plotted. But you see, the Torah doesn't view it that way. The Torah doesn't say that, because if the Torah agreed with your logic, then the Torah should have never allowed you to punish Edom Zomimim, because look at what the Torah says. If they killed, you don't kill them. But if they didn't kill, you do kill them. So what do you see? The Torah does not say that plotting is all so much less than actually doing. That your fortiori doesn't fit with the Torah's logic. You'll ask me, so what is the Torah's logic? I don't know. But what I do know is that the Torah doesn't agree with your Kal V'Chomer.
That's fortiori.
Kal V'Chomer. Matkif L'Ravino, so Ravina comes on the attack. In Cain, if that logic is true with regards to Edom Zomimim, that you could consider their plotting as something not so severe, so then, bitalta Torah Edim Zomimim. So then, you could just annul the whole idea of Edim Zomimim. Just say Kal V'Chomer. If they actually stoned Chaim Yankel, they don't get stoned. So then, in a case where they only meant to stone him and they got the ruling from the courts, but they didn't yet stone him, and odin shelo yisaken, certainly you shouldn't stone him, right? But that's not so. The Torah tells you not that way. Ela machvarta. But the white and clean answer is Kedeshaninan Meikara, like we answered initially. So the Gemara doesn't accept Parpada's answer.